All right, everybody. Welcome, welcome. This is Jerry Fetta here, CEO and founder of Wealth Dynamics. Hope you are having a terrific evening. Coming to you live with Finance Friday. So, for those of you that are just tuning in for the first time, I want to give a quick introduction to myself. I'm Jerry Fetta, and so my main focus, I do these Finance Friday things. I've done these every week for like 5 years now. Right. And my big focus and purpose with this is sharing financial education. Right. And the reason why is financial education is one of those things that's right up there with gravity and oxygen. Like, we need to know how it works. It's not optional. There's no like, I'm not going to participate. I'm not doing it. It's going to happen whether you participate or not. And so it's something I'm very passionate about making sure, the education is out there because it's not something that's complicated or complex, but it's something that is made that way. Right. So I can't tell you how many times I have experienced and heard as a financial expert talking to other people that are like, finances are so complicated. I'll never understand them. All these types of things. Right. And so hang on, let me just send a real quick message. So what I want to go over this evening is bank failures, right? So I'm going to share my screen here and go over exactly what's going on this with this because this is something that happened last year, right? Last year we had quite a bit of bank failures going on, right? And we didn't hear much about it since then. It's something that, in the last 12 months we had, I think, 12 to 15 banks fail, and that was just it. Like, there wasn't more, right? So it didn't suddenly stop or get better. And about 2 weeks ago, we had another one happen. Right. And so I'm talking to you this evening about it because I want to share with you what you can do about it. Right. What can you do about it? How do you prepare for something like this? Because we had a bank failure, like I mentioned, about 2 weeks ago. Okay. So I'm going to share my screen here and we're going to dive into this evening. We're going to talk about how to protect against bank failures. Okay. All right, so Finance Friday, real quick, I want to give you the purpose of this, right? So the purpose of Finance Friday is to give simple, true, and applicable financial training that helps good people build more wealth and make the world a better place, right? So that's my mission, that's my vision in life. If you're a good person, which I believe most people are, I want to help you build more wealth, and I want to make sure that we're able to work together to make the world a better place, right? And a big part of that is giving you the education that you need, so that you're able to make educated financial decisions, right? I want to just check my Facebook group and make sure that this is up and running okay. All right, it doesn't look like it is yet. Hang on just a sec. All right, so I'm making sure that that gets handled. So guys, basically what we're going to go over this evening on Finance Friday is the bank failure thing, but I want to go over the rules first, right? The rules to this. And before you learn anything finance, like, it's important to understand the rules to the game. And so the rules to the game of learning are, number one, have a purpose, right? I want you to have a purpose behind being here. Why are you here? What are you trying to learn? What are you trying to understand? Right? What's up, Kate? Good to see you. Number two, don't be a know-it-all, right? One of the reasons people don't learn anything is they don't know, they think they know it already. So what I would like you to do is I want you to take a moment and I want you to think about the things you do know about finance and acknowledge those. I get it. You don't know nothing, right? But you also don't know everything, just like I don't. There's something to be learned. And so we've got to remove that barrier of thinking I know it all or I've heard this already, right? Number three is believe in yourself. I hit this every week. If you don't believe in yourself and think that you can do this stuff, you're not going to do it, right? You can learn it, you can get it correct, you can get all the understanding in the world, but if you don't actually believe that it's a real thing, it's not going to happen, right? And then finally, I want you to apply the Jerry Fetta rule here. This means that you need to take what you're learning and find some way to apply it to your life in 24 hours or less. Right. And I play this game with myself when I learn something. I'm playing this game where, okay, if I don't learn this and apply it within 24 hours, it's gone forever. It disappears. Right. And that's not real. Is that really going to happen? Probably not. But because I do that, I end up retaining the information and using it. Okay. So those are the things I want to cover first before we get into this. So let's get into it. How to protect against bank failures. So what is a bank failure? Okay. Let me give you a definition on that. This is from Investopedia. The definition of a bank failure is the closing of a bank, by a federal or state regulator, right? So it's when the bank can't meet its obligations to depositors, borrowers, and others. So if it can't meet its obligations, what does that mean? I want to point this out, right? Because I didn't realize this for the longest time. It says a bank can't meet its obligations to depositors, right? What is an obligation? An obligation is a debt, isn't it? When you have a financial obligation, that means you have a financial debt. So therefore, a bank somehow, and we're going to get into this tonight, has a financial debt towards its depositors. Okay, I want you to think about that because that's not necessarily what I think when I signed up for a bank account. I'm not thinking I'm loaning money to the bank right now. I'm not thinking that the bank has debt with me. That's not at all the impression that I was given when I first started putting money in bank accounts, right? When I learned that, I started putting very little money into bank accounts, right? So there's definitely something there to think about, right? So it's going to close down. It's going to get shut down by a regulator if it fails. So let's first talk about, to really understand this, we need to understand how do banks stay in business, right? Because we're talking about how they fail. We would need to understand not only how do they fail, but how do they not fail? How does a bank actually stay in business and make money? And guys, when I was going through this, I wasn't sure what I was more disturbed by, right? The bank failing or the bank being profitable? Like both of those to me were pretty freaking disturbing. Okay, so here's how this works. Step number one, here's how banks stay in business. Step number one, they collect a deposit, right? They collect a deposit, right? That's the money that you put in your savings account, right? They collect deposits from people like you and me, our hard-earned savings. Step number two, the bank borrows against deposits. Okay, think about this. When you get a mortgage, where did that money come from? When you get a credit card from the bank, where did that money come from? When you get a car loan, where did that money come from? That was either your own deposits, which is ironic because now you're paying interest on the money that you put in the first place, or it's other people's deposits. The bank never had any money to begin with. It's all other people's money. Okay. Now, those that are in the Robert Kiyosaki rich dad crowd, yeah, use other people's money. No, don't. Use your own money and learn how to get money instead of finding ways to scam other people out of their money and make money and pay them less. Right? Figure out how to get your own money. That's real value in society. There's no value. Literally, the banks are creating zero value. Think about this. You are depositing your money, and what are they paying you? 0.10%, maybe 0.20%, maybe at the high end, 0.50. Not very much. And you might be like, oh, right now I can do a high interest rate certificate of deposit and I can make 4%. Yeah, and your money is locked up with them for 18 months while they're doing the exact system I'm about to describe to you. You're just giving them more leeway, right? Banks are not your friends, though. They're borrowing against your deposits. They're paying you like 0.20% on your money, right? Not very much at all. And your money sits there, or so you think it sits there in the account. Really, it doesn't, right? They've borrowed against it. So they borrow your deposit, then they invest your money, okay? Now, this is a real statistic. This is from Bauer Financial. When banks get your deposits, they make 1,200% more money on your money than they pay you. I'm going to repeat that. They make 1,200% per year more than they pay you on average. So think about that. We're not talking 10. We're not talking 8. We're not even talking 20 or 40. 1,200% more than they pay you. 1200%. Like, think about that is literally 120 times more money. Or, sorry, 12 times more money, not 120 times, 12 times more money. Right? They're paying you 0.20. Let's look at the math on that really quick. What is 0.20 times 12? 0.20 times 12. Right? So they're making, and they don't even have to make that much. 2.4% is already 12 times more than 0.20. Right? That's 1200 times more money. So you look at this and you're like, oh, mortgage rates, they're not making that much. Yeah. How many times does 0.20 go into an 8% mortgage? How many times does 0.20 go into a 15% credit card? Right? This is criminal. And here's the thing is your money is at risk. And we're talking about banks failing. The question I want to plant in your mind right now, how in the world does a bank fail when they have the opportunity to make 1200% more money than they pay in costs? What is it that they're failing on? You don't fail on good old mortgages. I can tell you that much. People pay their mortgage. You make 2.5, 3% interest on a mortgage. You've only got to pay 0.20 out to your depositors. That's a steady business model. You can consistently do that, right? No. They're failing because they speculate. They're beyond mortgages and car loans. They're doing foreign currency trading. They're basically hedge funds now. Okay, quarter four of 2020, JP Morgan Chase's number one profit center for their banking cartel, is what I would call it, was foreign currency trading. That is highly speculative. So they're losing money because they're speculating, right? Not only are they already putting your money at risk by borrowing against it in the first place and not really telling you about it, they're taking it and then they're investing it in the most risky things they can get their hands on. Okay, so check this out. That's their model. They're going to make 1,200% more than they pay you. Step number four, if they're profitable, they pay less interest to depositors than what is made. At the bottom, they earn a profit. That's it. That's how a bank works. Very simple business model, right? This is not complicated, and it's also not beneficial to you or me. Like, where do you benefit in this system? Where? You don't make money on this. You're not really getting your funds protected. And I want to explain this like a car. Okay, what's up, Francisco? Good to see you tonight. I want to explain this like a car. Okay, so let's pretend this is my favorite way to explain this. Let's pretend that you own a car, right? You worked hard, you saved up, and you bought a Benz. You've got this Mercedes-Benz, you're proud of it. You're like, man, this is my favorite car I've ever owned. And you're going on a trip and you go to the airport, right? And you do that thing where you drop your car off with these people at the gate and they watch it for you while you're gone and they keep it safe and you get your little ticket. And then you bring your little ticket back and pick your car up when you're home. You do that with me, and I own the storage place, right? And so you give me the money, I give you the ticket, I take your car keys, I park it in the garage. And I say, don't worry, we're gonna keep it safe. We're gonna take excellent care of it. It'll be here when you get back, right? Now you come back from your trip. You went to the Bahamas, it was great. You're suntanned, you and your spouse, you had a great time. And so you get your ticket and you walk up to the window and you're like, hey, I'm here to pick up my car. Right? And I come to you and I say, all right, I got to tell you something. While you were gone, we loaned your car out to someone else. We put it on Turo. Right? And I know we didn't tell you about that. And I know you weren't aware of it. We figured, you weren't using it. We could make $60 a day doing that. And, we would be able to make some extra money. And then we just bring the car back when you were done and we'd have it when you're ready. Right? And you're pretty pissed. You're like, Jerry, why would you do that? I gave you no permission. Like, I did not tell you you could do that. I'm going to unshare my screen as I tell this epic tale of cars. And you say, why did you do that? I gave you no permission to do that. Right? And I tell you, okay, well, I mean, I get it. You're mad. And you're like, cool, can I have my car? And I'm like, well, there's one thing. We wrecked it. When it was on Turo, we wrecked it. Right? So you're like, wait a second. I gave you my car to store it, right? I paid you for that. I paid you. Just like at a bank, you pay them to open up an account, don't you? You have monthly account fees, don't you? You are paying them to store your money, just like in this example, you're paying me to store your car, right? And just like in this story, they're not storing your money. They're giving it out to other people. They're investing it. Just like in this story, I'm putting your car on Turo when you're on vacation and not telling you about it and pocketing the profits. Right? Now, here's what I want to just break it to you. Like if we look at this and break it down, in the car scenario, would you have been mad if I told you about it and I was like, hey, let's split the profits? No. What's up, Reggie? Good to see you. Reggie, you probably would be like, dude, I get it. That's an awesome idea. I'll split the profits. You do the work. Let's both pocket some money. Let's make some dough together. I'm gonna go on vacation. I'll come back and get my car. Let's make sure it's insured. Let's make sure, crazy people don't drive it. But yeah, I'll come back and get some money too when I pick it up. You'd be very happy about that idea, wouldn't you? Okay. The banks aren't doing that. Like imagine, and they have the opportunity to do it. When you open up an account with a bank, imagine if they were like, Francisco, when you put your money in this bank account, we're going to invest this money. And we're going to make 1,200% more than we usually would pay you. And because you're letting us use your money, I want to split the profits with you. Right? And we'll go 50-50 on it. We're going to make 1,200% more than the average savings account does. So you're going to make 600% extra. We're going to make 600% extra. Is that a deal? And probably Francisco is thinking, yeah, that's a deal. Like, let's do that deal, right? And so, what's up, Bree? Good to see you. And so you would see that and be like, man, that's awesome, that's excellent. But that's not what's happening. They're not telling you about it. They're not splitting the profits with you. And in the car example, they're loaning the car out on Turo and they're getting it wrecked. And then when you're coming to pick it up, they're like, oh, we also didn't have insurance. Right? How pissed would you be if that was your car? And you would never do that. You would never give me your car if you knew that that's what I was going to do with it. Okay. Let me share my screen again because we've reached a special moment in your life where you officially know now that this is what banks are going to do with your money when you give it to them. They are going to loan it out to other people. They are going to put it at risk. They are going to lose it. It may not be insured, and you're going to be the one on the hook at the end when you come to get your money and it's not there. Okay. So on average, banks make 1200% more per year, more than the depositors. They're not paying you that. So that's how banks make money. Let's talk about how banks fail, right? So this is how a bank fails. Here's the step by step. Any of you guys that want to get into failing, into bank failure as a profession, this is the hat write up right here. So you would still collect deposits, right? Step number one, done. You would still borrow against deposits. Step number two, done. You would still invest the borrowed deposits. Step number three, done. Step number four, all you got to do is change one thing. Instead of making money, you would lose money. Instead of earning more than you owe your depositors, you'd simply earn less than you owe your depositors. Right? That's it. That's all you have to do is lose the money. You lose the money, you're out of business. You owe depositors, you've got all sorts of stuff, obligations going on, like we talked about, and you fail, and the government comes in and they intervene, and it turns into a bank failure. Okay, now I want you to think about this as well. And it says this at the bottom. A deposit is an asset for the depositor. So when you put a deposit into a bank, for you, that's an asset, isn't it? That's your savings, that's your cash, that's the money you've built up. For the bank, that is not an asset on their balance sheet. Your deposit is actually a liability. Why? Because they owe it back to you with interest. So when your asset is someone else's liability, do you really think they're going to take the same care of it? Okay, imagine like just change the context to anything else. You're a single parent, you have a kid, the kid is your asset, you get married. And the guy or girl you marry thinks the kid is a liability. They're not going to take the same care of the kid, right? Because they don't look at it the same way. They're not vested the way you are. You put money in a bank, that's your asset. And they look at it and they say, that's a liability. They're not going to take care of your money the way you would because you think it's an asset. And by definition on their balance sheet, they do not. They will never put your best interest in mind because they view your money differently than you do. They view the asset of your life as a liability, and you are the source of that liability. Right? They're not looking out for you. Now, their investment is an asset for the bank. Now, this is the weird part. They take the money that you've put in, they borrow against it, and the moment they borrow against it and they invest it, now on their balance sheet, it becomes an asset. Why? Because it's an asset that they own, they bought investments, and they make money off of it. Okay? However, when they do that, their asset becomes your liability. Their asset becomes a liability for you and I as depositors. Right? I want you to really think about that. They put money, like Silicon Valley Bank failed last year. Could you know why they failed? They took the majority of their deposits and they invested them in risky private equity technology stocks. Think about that. That's basically like there's crypto up here, and then one notch below crypto is these tech stocks that have no earnings, pre-revenue companies. There's no profitability there, right? That's as high risky as you can get. You wouldn't invest with a bank that said, "Hey, we took all the deposits and bought crypto with it," would you? You'd be like, "That sounds crazy. Why would you do that? That makes zero sense," right? That's literally the dumbest thing you could do with money. You borrow money from someone else and load it all up on private equity technology stocks that aren't profitable. Good one. These are people that go to like Wharton Business School and have Harvard degrees and they're bankers. They're running the banking system. Think about that. That's the level of stupidity that happens at the apparently the highest levels of financial education, right? Quote unquote. So that's how a bank fails. Now, the question would come up, right? Bree, don't banks have reserves? Right? Bree knows better because Bree has done this stuff with us. Banks, don't they have reserves? Like if they fail, don't they have money on hand for us? So a bank practices what's called fractional reserve lending. You'll see that right here. Fractional reserve lending, which means historically they've been allowed to borrow against 90% of their deposits and they only have to keep 10% in reserves. The key word here is the word historically. What does historically mean? Historically means old, a while ago, stinky, crusty, doesn't happen anymore, right? So throughout history, when you put in 100 grand, they can borrow 90 of it and leave 10. That's not very much in reserves. Now in 2020, and this happened the same day that the COVIDs broke out, right? The same day the stock market crashed. It was like March 14th of 2020 or 13th. I still remember almost exactly when it was. Very quietly, when all of this happened, the stock market crashed. The pandemic's going crazy. The banks lowered their reserve requirement to zero. Nice and quiet. They didn't tell anyone about it. There was no news story. There was nothing. They just, while everyone is looking over here, let's quickly just do this. And they brought this, they canceled this 10% reserve requirement and they brought it down to zero. And it has never been reinstated since. Guys, it is now the year 2024 and a half. 4.5 years later, and they are still, what does that mean? They're borrowing 100% of your money. They have no reserves. So when a bank has no reserves and they invest in the riskiest things you can invest in and they lose money, there's no reserves to bail them out. There's nothing like that. They do not have reserves. Even when they do have reserves, banks have about a 30-day run rate, which means they have about enough money in reserves to stay in business for 30 days, and that's it. Right? You think of a bank and you think, like, exactly, risking 100% of our money. It's disgusting, right? You think about this and it's like, like banks, they're full of money. Like, I literally thought, like, when as a kid, Scrooge McDuck, you go in there, like, oh, they have a vault. And there must be, it's full of money. There must be so much going on. Most banks keep $10,000 in vault cash. That's not going to do much, right? 30 days worth of reserves. They're risking 100% of the money. There's nothing there to bail them out. And this gets worse, guys. This gets worse. Okay, so check this out. What happens when a bank fails? Reggie's tracking. I can see it, right? Guys, and if you're watching this, like, realize this is gnarly. Right? Like this should be a Netflix documentary. I don't know how it's not. It should be. Right? But there's a solution. And I want you to know that. I'm sharing with you all the gory details. When I first learned this, just so you feel better, when I first learned this, I was depressed straight up for like 3 days, man. I felt sick. I was like, life is a scam. Like what do you do now? Right? And so when I learned this, like I didn't have a solution at the time. Okay, you guys have a solution. I'm going to share with you the solution today too. We don't just do problems, we do solutions as well, right? Reggie said he's experienced the same thing. So what happens when a bank fails? Okay, and you guys are going to like let's, some things are so bad, so evil, so wrong, so sad that all you can do is laugh at them. So I want you to have some humor on this. When a bank fails, so let's just recap really quick so far. That you deposited money in the bank to save the money in a reserve area to store your money. Because that's what banks are for. And they didn't do that. They borrowed against it and they borrowed against 100% of it and they bought the riskiest shit they could buy and they lost all your money. Now they owe you, right? So what is their solution? They already borrowed money and lost the money they borrowed and can't pay back the people they borrowed from. So let's track with that, okay? Their first solution is to borrow money from another bank to pay back their own depositors. Guys, pop quiz. Where did the money from the other bank come from? It's depositors. So they, Bank A, like I'm just dying over here laughing at this because it's so funny when you think about it. Like it's bad. Don't get me wrong, it's bad. But it's one of those things where you're like, this is too good to be true. Like this is so messed up. All I can do is laugh at it, right? Bank A borrows money from its own depositors. Risks all of it, loses all of the money, has no money left, and says the solution to that is to go repeat the same thing with the depositors from another bank. So we're going to go to the other bank and let's borrow from their depositors now. And let's take that money and let's use that to pay back our depositors. And do you know what's the worst part of this? The other bank lets them. The other bank thinks that it is a smart idea to borrow against their own depositors to loan the money to a bank that just failed so they can try and pay back their depositors. Guys, this is lunacy. This is literally like lock them in a cage with padded walls and put a padlock on it. Like, don't let them out. They should not be running the financial system. This is insane, right? So that's what happens. Step number two, bank run. What is a bank run? A bank run means the depositors found out. We figured it out. We're like, these guys are broke. And so we quickly start trying to withdraw all of our money because we don't want to lose the money that we've put in the bank. And when that happens, the bank collapses. And I want everyone here to realize if every single individual in the United States today went to their bank and withdrew all of their money, the financial system would fail like that. Why? Because that money isn't there. The money isn't there. It isn't going to be there. And if it was there, there wouldn't be a banking system. The money has to be in the bank system, loaning it out for interest for any of this to work. Right? Again, go back to the car example. Imagine every American drives their car tomorrow and all the highways fail. You would be a little worried about the road system, wouldn't you? You'd be like, I don't feel comfortable driving on those. Any moment, like the entire thing could just fall through and I fall into the middle of the earth with Frodo Baggins. I'm not about that. Not now, not ever. I'm not driving my car anymore. That's what you would say. But with the bank, you're like, we'll let them slide. It's okay. Right? They've screwed us over always, but they're not going to do it again. We trust them. They're good guys. They're good people, right? No. So they do a bank run. This is what happened with Silicon Valley Bank. A bank run occurred. The depositors found out. They start trying to withdraw. And in a bank run situation, banks are allowed to withhold your deposits. They're allowed to say, sorry, this is for the benefit of the bank and all its depositors. You can only take out so much money. In the European financial crisis, they were only like, I think they were only allowed to withdraw $25 a day to keep the financial system from collapsing, right? And because of the 2008 crisis, the law now is banks are required to do what's called a bail-in before they will get a bailout. A bail-in means they get to keep all your deposits to stay afloat before the government will bail them out again. Right? Now, if it doesn't work out, the FDIC takes over. And you guys are like, okay, good, cue the cavalry. The FDIC, I know I've got that insurance and it's going to cover me. Okay, check this out. FDIC insurance makes full any deposits under $250,000. In the Silicon Valley bank failure, over 90% of their deposits were above the limit. Over 90%. Right? So people who are like, oh, I've got FDIC insurance. No. 9 out of 10 of them didn't. I want you to think about it. Those are families. Those are parents. Those are retirement accounts. Those are savings for kids. That's people's money that they're relying on that's just gone because of a corrupt financial system. Okay? Now here's the craziest thing about it. The FDIC, they're either going to sell the bank to a larger bank or they're going to manage the failed bank directly. Do you know who they're going to sell it to? They're going to sell it to JP Morgan Chase. They're going to sell it to Bank of America. It just makes these big oligarchies in the system bigger, right? It literally just strengthens the game. It's terrible, but that's what happens. Okay. Now, let's talk a bit about the FDIC. Okay. Does the FDIC really protect you? The FDIC covers, like we said, $250,000 per person. Like I mentioned, Silicon Valley Bank, they failed in 2023. 94% of their deposits were uninsured. When Signature Bank failed in 2023, 90% of their deposits were uninsured. At the end of 2022, 43% of all bank deposits were uninsured. That's almost half, guys. 43%. Now, how does the FDIC actually exist? What is that, right? The banks are supposed to pay premiums. It's an insurance group. They're supposed to pay premiums to the FDIC. And those premiums build up in a reserve account, just like any insurance company, and they pay out when there's a claim. Okay. So banks have lobbied throughout history to reduce and even eliminate paying those premiums. The FDIC is extremely underfunded, and it's been said that it only has enough to cover 2% of all deposits. 2%. So it's not just about how much of the money is insured. Because we already see only 43% of the money in banks is insured. That's about half. Toss a coin, half your life savings, right? It's not just about 43% of it being insured. It's can the insurance actually pay? The insurance is a guarantee, and the guarantee is only as good as the guarantor, isn't it? So if the insurance can't pay, what's going to happen? Right? And it's not as bad as you guys think, where you're like, oh no, we're all going to lose everything. It's a little worse, right? You're going to pay. The FDIC will be funded at that point with taxpayer dollars. So let's track with that. You deposited your money. The bank borrowed against your deposits and didn't tell you. I guess 100% of the money you put in there, risked it on crypto stocks, tech thing, whatever, currency trading, crazy risky stuff they're doing, lost all your money, and then you paid for their bailout. You paid for their bailout with tax dollars because the FDIC doesn't have enough money to cover it. Let's go back to the car example, okay? Because this really hits home when you think about this, right? We talked about the car example, right? You do the thing at the airport and you drop your car off with me and I put it on Turo and you come back to get it and I wreck your car and then it turns out that there's not insurance, right? And then you have to pay for it out of your own pocket with your insurance and your rates are going to go up. Do you know what happens when you bail a bank out with taxpayer money? Taxes go up. You don't just pay for it once on the bailout. You pay for it forever because the government doesn't bring in revenue. The only money they get is from taxes. So if they're having to borrow more money to bail out banks and you pay for that money with your tax dollars and they had to borrow money to get the money because they borrow money from a bank also, your future taxes just went up. You're going to pay for that for the rest of your life, not just the one time. Okay. There's this movie that I watched the other night. I don't know if you guys have seen this movie. It's called Dark Waters. Who's seen this, right? Dark Waters. It's DuPont, right? The whole Teflon story. Back in the 90s, they were putting chemicals in the water, and it turned out that these chemicals, you know, it's the what they were using in Teflon pans, which actually was originally used for covering armored coated tanks, right? And they were putting this in people's water. They were putting it in the air, and it was getting people sick. They were dying. They were getting cancer. The farmers, their entire herds were dying. And there was one attorney who investigated this, right? And when he investigated it, he found out that it was rampant fraud and it was known about. And even though it was known about and they knew it was killing people, for example, there was a woman who worked in the factory. She was scrubbing these big vats full of this Teflon product, right? She was pregnant. So they took her off the line, the production line all of a sudden, didn't tell her why. And when her baby was born, it had a missing eyeball in one nostril, right? And when she asked if it was from the chemicals, they said no, but their records, the attorney found out they knew it was from the chemicals. They admitted to it in their own records. They said, this is happening, right? They fire the lady. They take her off the line. They erased her entire work history. They took all the ladies off the line when that happened. As soon as this lady's gone a couple years later, they put all the women back on and say nothing. Right. And so this movie is exposing that and the level of insidiousness and evil. People were in uproar and they should be. Right. This is like that. This is like that, guys, except for this is everything. You can't even buy Teflon pans to get sick if you don't have money. Your entire life is based on this financial system. And when you deposit money in a bank, right? This is what's happening, right? And when you, let me go back a couple slides. And when you do this, you are flowing them power. You are literally feeding evil. And I know you're listening, you're Jerry, you're over exaggerating this and that. Guys, in 2008, do you remember what happened? Do you remember what happened in 2008 when half of America lost their houses and retirement plans were wiped out, right? The banks did that on purpose. They knew about it. There is a court hearing where they were reading the emails between Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, these various banks that were involved, and they had a fund they were offering called the Timberwolf Fund, where they were reselling these subprime mortgages. And the manager of that fund was literally saying, "This fund is such a piece of crap. Like, who else can we sell it to?" was the gist of his email. They read that in front of a congressional hearing. You can go look it up, it's on YouTube. So not only did they know about it, they were laughing about the fact that they were screwing you and I all over and ruining our lives financially. This is the system that you're flowing power to, that you're funding, and that you are supporting when you put money in a bank. You shouldn't want to do that. Now, the only reason you would do it is either you don't know what's happening. Congratulations, now you know what's happening, right? Sorry about that. I got to tell you the anger, frustration, fear, sadness, all of these things that I was feeling at that time. None of them good emotions. Confusion. Like, literally, just like I just wanted to scream when I learned this. So when I learned this solution, it became what I devoted my life to. Right? And I'm not asking you to devote your life to this as you're listening. I'm asking you to join the good guys. There's a solution to all of this, and there's a solution that when enough of us do it, it's going to change things big time. But it's going to take all of us doing it, sharing it, educating, getting the word out, making sure others are aware of what's happening. Okay, so let me show you the solution. The solution, and these are just two charts, right, is to start your own bank, right? Your own banking system. Now, before I tell you what this is, and there's actually a slight little typo here, right? This is funny. You don't make 10 to 40% in their bank. You make 0.10 to 0.40. Let me put the decimals there. So if you started your own bank, right, on your money, let's say that you could make 3 to 5% growth on your money versus making 0.10 to 0.40. Which one would you pick? Okay, I would pick the 3 to 5. I bet you would too. Okay, your money doubles every 12 years in your own bank. It doubles every 180 years in their bank. Which one do you pick? Right? Liquidity on deposits. You can borrow 70 to 90% of your own money while it still grows by using your own bank. You get to do the exact thing that they've been doing to you. Or with their bank, you have access to 100% of your money, but it's not going to grow when you use it. And if you don't use it, it's still only making 0.10 to 0.40. Which one do you pick? With your bank, when you borrow against it, you pay no taxes. With their bank, when you take your money out, you do pay taxes on the measly little growth that you're going to get. Okay, your bank, you're an owner and you get profit. Remember that thing I said when I did the Turo story and I was like, what if I split it with you? Would you be happy? And you were like, yeah, right? This is that. What if you could be a partner? What if you could own the bank? What if you could make money and actually be an equity stakeholder in it? Right? You would probably want to do that, wouldn't you? You would want the ownership because you don't get ownership in their bank. You get guaranteed growth either way, right? Guarantees against loss either way. Again, this is tax-free. Their bank is not. On your bank, you're protected from creditors. On their bank, they are the creditor. Like, think about, like I've had clients that are financially, they're going through debt consolidation and debt resolution. And sometimes they want to do a debt renegotiation and resolution on a credit card, and they can't because that creditor is where they have their savings account. And they know if they do anything, the creditor, the bank, the one that they owe is just gonna, they're gonna like swipe their savings account. They're gonna sweep all the money out, keep the savings. Right? You don't have that with your own banking system. With your bank, you would get protection from lawsuits. With their bank, they're actually going to help give garnishments to the party that wins. How on your side does that sound? With your bank, you get complete protection of privacy. With their bank, they report everything you do. With your bank, there is no fractional reserve banking involved at all. Now, what is fractional reserve banking? That's the process where they can borrow 100% of your money and not tell you about it and go risk it out and do crazy things with it, right? With your own banking system, you're borrowing your own money. There's no fractional reserve banking involved whatsoever. Someone else is not borrowing against your own money. You get to borrow against your own money, and your deposit still grows when you do that. Okay? The insurance on insolvency with your own banking system is up to $400,000. Okay? With their banking system, it's only $250,000. And like we said, only 43% of deposits are insured. With your banking system, you avoid probate at death. With their banking system, you don't. With your bank, you get a tax-free death benefit. With their bank, you don't. Your bank has a 200-year track record, which is actually longer than the current banking system has even been around. So that wins there too. And then here's the proof in the pudding. Which one do the banks use? The banks use this. They don't even use their own product, right? So that checks that box off too. What is this? This is whole life insurance. This is whole life insurance. And for those that are like me, where you grew up watching too much Dave Ramsey or something, right? Life insurance is a financial resource, just like wood, just like metal, right? What you do with it is what matters. How do you build it? What do you create with it? So there's a product that banks use. It's called bank-owned life insurance. You can go Google it. And they're doing exactly what I'm describing with this. They are the number one owner and purchaser of life insurance on the planet. While they're failing, they're using this life insurance product. And guys, here's the crazy part about this. I did some research on Silicon Valley Bank last year, right? And I was so disappointed with this. And I shouldn't have been, because I shouldn't have been surprised, but it caught me off guard. When Silicon Valley Bank failed, I think it was an hour before they went under. Guess what the executives did? These heroic bank executives, right? They didn't sacrifice their paychecks to make sure the depositors could get money. They weren't calling people to let them know what happened. They weren't having the tough conversations. No, 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 no. They wired themselves bonuses. About an hour before Silicon Valley Bank failed, the bankers wired themselves bonuses. Okay, why does this sound familiar? In 2008, the same thing happened. The bank screwed over the financial system, wiped out people's retirements, wiped out their home mortgages, all of this stuff, right? When the government bailed them out, they gave themselves bonuses. Okay, 2020, what happened? All these loans came out, PPP loans and small business loans. A lot of banks and financial institutions got these loans, right? The intention was that money would flow through to the economy, that we would all get, you know, access to liquidity and get help. Do you know what they did instead? They kept it. They raised interest rates, didn't they? After they got that money, interest rates climbed and climbed and climbed to where they are today. Some of the highest they've been in 15, 20 years, right? Why? Because the banks didn't give us the money. They made it harder to get money. Banks are not on your side. The mortgage company isn't on your team. Your savings account isn't on your team. Your checking account guy is not on your team. And I'm not telling you the teller at your bank is bad. They probably don't know what's happening, right? But I'm telling you the system, the way that it works is suppressive. And you either support that or you don't. You can't be in the middle on something like this. Okay? So final steps here. What is your action plan? If you didn't know this before today, to that degree, you lacked financial literacy. Okay, you lacked financial literacy, and that financial illiteracy can cost you. As you can see, it's one of the most important investments you can make. My most money I've made has been because of my financial literacy. The things I knew about money that worked and that were true and that helped me, those have been tremendous. The times I've lost money, the times I've been in unfortunate circumstances is due to my own financial illiteracy. There's something I didn't know about money. Because I didn't know about it, I couldn't be at cause. I couldn't be in control and in the driver's seat. And then stuff happened to me. I was the effect. I lost. I this, I that, it happens to me. So you need to decide that you will invest in your financial literacy. And I want to applaud you for being on this today. If you're watching live or listening or watching the replay, this is financial literacy. What you just engaged in was an investment of time in your financial literacy. And I do the financial literacy stuff freely because, guys, this truly needs to be out there. Right? Imagine discovering the cure for cancer. There are two types of people on this planet. There's the kind of person that's like, everyone needs this. I'm not charging for it. Everyone needs this. I'm going to freely tell them about it. I'm going to tell them what they should do, and I'm going to help. Okay. Then there's the guy that's like, supply and demand. There's a pretty high demand. I've got the only supply. I'm going to charge premium rates because it's that or dying. Right? I'm the first guy. I'm the first guy. I want you to be the first guy, the first gal. Right? So decide that you will invest in financial literacy. I want you to get my books. I wrote a book on this. It's called Blueprint to Financial Freedom. Right? And this was after over a decade of researching the top 1% of wealth and seeing what do they actually do with their money. Not what are the banks telling us to do. Not what is Wall Street telling us to do. Right? What is it that the wealthy actually did? Right? And I studied that and I did that with my own finances, and that's what my book is about. Right? And the stuff works. Okay, so I want you to grab my book. I want you to read it. And then I want you to plug in with Wealth Dynamics Nation. We've got Wealth Dynamics Nation on Facebook. It's the top financial training group on the planet, absolutely free. I go live in there 4 or 5 times a week. We've got an awesome community in there. We're going to be putting new courses together that are completely free in that group as well, so that anybody and anywhere on the planet can start getting financial literacy training. Okay, so if you're watching this right now, what I want you to do is I want you to scan the QR code on the screen. Okay, scan the QR code on the screen, grab a copy of my book completely free. You cover the shipping, we will send the book out to you, right? I'll cover the book, you cover the shipping. That's the deal. It's a partnership. You invest in shipping and handling. I'll invest in not only having written the book, but I will actually produce it for you, print it, all of that at no cost. Okay, meet me in the middle. You grab that. And then I want you to read it. And I want you to go to Wealth Dynamics Nation on Facebook. And I want you to join. Okay, I want you to join, plug in with our community, get involved, start attending more of these, and you're going to see your financial literacy levels increasing. And when that happens, your life is going to get better. Okay, and in closing, and I'm going to leave this up here actually for you guys. In closing, okay, this wealth stuff is not just about money. It's not just about, having stuff. Right? That's actually a very low motivator for me. And I think it's a low motivator for a lot of wealthy people. We're not doing it for that. We're doing it for this reason. Okay. When I was 18 years old, I had a client of mine tell me, Jerry, in life, you can only have time or money. You can't have both. Right. And this was a dad, married, kids, owned a home, worked a corporate job, making a good income, had the vacation hours, had the 401k, all the stuff. And he was in his late 30s and he was giving up on life at that point. He's like, basically, he was telling me his own viewpoint of, I will only either have one or the other, and I'll never have both. And I don't believe that. You see, I believe that wealth means abundance and prosperity in all areas of life. And I believe that you can have both time and money and use and have them both at the same time. That's what I do, right? And I believe that good people, if they had control of the majority of wealth, they would use it to make the world a better place. Because I believe in people and I believe in you, and I believe that there are good people out there who just don't have the training. And I also believe in numbers. I'm a math guy, right? There are more good people on this planet than bad people on this planet. Aren't there? So if I can teach the majority of the good people what I'm sharing with you today, they would build wealth with that knowledge. They would improve the quality of life for themselves. They would improve the quality of life for their loved ones. They would improve the quality of life for the world around them. And I want to paint you the picture of this ripple effect that would occur. Okay, just with the life insurance I mentioned, the sacred account, right? Just with the life insurance I mentioned. Let me scroll back to that page. Right, so the life insurance I mentioned, the sacred account, let me go back here. Here it is. Okay. This polls, let's say we got 10% of America to do this. Okay, 30 million people. That would mean for 30 million people, the banks would lose their business. Why? Because when you put money in life insurance, you no longer save money in a bank and you no longer take loans from a bank. You take loans from your insurance policy instead. You deposit money in your insurance policy instead. So if 30 million people did that, right? We would see the banking system take a huge hit. They wouldn't be able to stay in business. Not only that, money that goes into a life insurance policy is never taxed again. You don't pay income tax on it. It's tax-free money. Right? And I know you're like, "Well, Jerry, what about if the laws change?" Guys, Joe Biden owns six of these things. It's disclosed on his presidential balance sheet. This is not going anywhere. The banks are the number one owner and purchaser of this product. It's not going anywhere. Right? When you align yourself to doing the things that the vested interests are doing, they can't hurt you without hurting themselves. Right? The insurance companies, they're right up in there in this game. When COVID happened and we had that bill at the end of 2020 when everyone got stimulus money, did you know that the insurance companies lobbied to increase the contribution limits on life insurance policies so that high-income individuals could store more money tax-free? Because that has everything to do with COVID, doesn't it? Right? So here's the vision I'm painting. This is freedom. This is people escaping suppression. This is people improving their quality of life. This is people taking control of their finances. This is a suppressive financial system that our country tried to get rid of. I'm going to do a special rolling into 4th of July and Memorial Day that's going to blow your mind. Because if you thought the Revolutionary War was because of a Tea Party, you got it all wrong. It was about this. It was about the exact thing I'm talking about today. Okay, and I'm not going to say any more because I'm going to give it away, but you need to just stay tuned the next couple of weeks. It's going to be some dope content that I put out there on Finance Friday. But guys, this is what I want to do impart to you today. And in closing, again, where do you start? You start with the book. Get the book, scan the QR code. If you're listening, go to jerryfetta.com/B2F promo. Okay, I can put that on the screen for you as well in case your QR code scanner doesn't work. Right? jerryfetta.com/B2F promo. That's where you can get a free copy of the book. And that's your starting point. And I want you to apply this rule as you're going through this. If this doesn't make sense to you, don't do it. If you look at this and you're like, "That doesn't make sense, doesn't add up, this isn't for me, it doesn't resonate, it's not real, that's not my deal," don't do it. If it does, though, then I want you to follow your own integrity. If you watch this, if you listen to it and it made sense and it resonated, you owe it not only to yourself, but you owe it to your loved ones and you owe it to the world around you to get started and get involved. Okay, that's all I got for tonight. Thank you guys for watching. Thank you so much for your support. I will see you guys later. For those of you that are in Wealth Dynamics Nation, my next live stream is tomorrow night. Okay, tomorrow night, we're going to talk about some cool stuff, how to actually open up multiple banking policies. We'll discuss that tomorrow evening. That'll be 8:30 p.m. Central Time. If you're watching or listening and you're like, what was that about Wealth Dynamics Nation? Go on Facebook, check out Wealth Dynamics Nation, join the group. It's free. You will not find another financial community like this. We're only going to continue improving it. We're going to do some crazy cool stuff in there coming up. That's all, guys. Have a great weekend. Have a happy Mother's Day to all you mothers out there. Appreciate you guys. All right, talk to you later. Bye.